Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Stan was on his fifth cup of coffee, and it wasn't even close to lunchtime. You look rotten. Are you sick? His friend Hank stuck his head in the doorway on his way down the hall. Nah, Stan ran his fingers through his hair and stared down at his desktop. It's just that Bev and I are splitting up, and it's such a mess. Gee, sorry. Hank plopped himself down into the nearest chair. That stinks. Right on that one. Stan stood up and stared out the window. It's the kids I'm worried about. Of course, they saw that things were bad, but, well, it just seems that kids can kind of get lost in all this. They're sad and angry, you know, the whole bit. Yeah, that's a big one, Hank commiserated. Got a good lawyer? Yeah, Stan shot him a wry grin. We got two. Just hope somebody's an expert on what to do about the kids.
From a parent's perspective, what can dads do to help their children through a family's divorce? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has been working with these kinds of issues for many years. Dr. Barry Freeman, a licensed clinical social worker, is a professor of early childhood education at Towson University in Towson, Maryland. He also has a private therapy practice with children, adolescents, families, and groups. His recent book, The Divorcing Father's Manual, 8 Steps to Help You and Your Child Survive and Thrive, is a wonderful resource for the kinds of issues we'll talk about today. Dr. Freeman is the father of 2 grown daughters. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Freeman.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
What's the biggest myth about divorced fathers?
I think the biggest myth about divorced fathers is that they really don't care about their children and that they don't want to support their children. And a lot of this involves around the issue of child support, whether fathers pay child support or not. I had a father that I was dealing with, I call him John. He saw his kids every other weekend with his divorce agreement, which isn't atypical for fathers. And he went to pick up his kids, and there were always these issues that if he was supposed to pick up his kid at 6 o'clock, they weren't there. Wife had taken him someplace else and he had to wait, and his recourse was either to call the police, to go to court again. And he, in frustration, thought that child support was the only way he could deal with this. So it wasn't a very good solution, but he stopped paying child support, ended up getting arrested, and this vicious cycle really occurs. So again, the biggest myth that fathers don't care about their kids.
What would you consider the biggest challenge for fathers who are divorcing?
I think the biggest challenge for fathers is really the biggest challenge for mothers, too, and that's to keep their kids out of the middle of the divorce. One of the fathers was telling me, in terms of dealing with his ex-wife around the kids, he said, you know, if I have to take a lot of junk from her, I'm going to do it. I'll take anything from her. I'll crawl. I'll do whatever I have to keep my kids from having to suffer. So keeping kids out of the middle by not letting a divorce issue go to trial so that people can solve it on a non-adversarial basis, to really focus on what's good for the kids and put their own hatred with each other, animosities, which are often real, on the shelf and leave it alone.
What is that called when you don't go to trial and you use somebody else? I can't remember the name.
Mediation.
Mediation, okay. Is that something that both parties have to agree to? How does that work?
Yes, both parties have to agree to mediation. And in truth, if both parties don't agree to sit down and talk in terms of what's in the best interest of their kids, nothing is really going to happen. I mean, you can't force someone to mediate. There are professional mediators who work out all complicated issues like pensions and assets, help do that. And sometimes there are very good family divorce attorneys who are more concerned with a non-adversarial kind of position and help people work things out. But I think the people have to be focused, the husband and wife, have to be focused on ending this in a way that doesn't hurt their children.
There's so much anger and hurt in so many of these circumstances. If you're counseling a dad who's about to go through a divorce, what suggestions would you make?
Well, you're right about the anger. I had a group once, and there was one dad, and he was one of the older dads in the group. And one new man came in, and he was talking about his wife had been fooling around with somebody else, and the marriage was over, and he was going to go to court, and he was going to slam dunk her. And he was furious. And one of the guys, been in the group for a while, he got up and he said, I felt the same way. My wife was fooling around, and I went to court, and I tried to slam dunk her, and he said, and it was the stupidest thing I ever did. It cost me so much money, got my children caught testifying in the middle. It did everything that I didn't want it to happen. And he said, don't do it. Deal with your anger some other way. Complain to your friends, scream and yell to your friends, go get a punching bag, do whatever. But if you start fighting with this woman, she's going to be the mother of your children forever, and you're going to have to deal with her forever.
Many of our listeners are males, and they're going to want to know, well, where do I go or whom do I turn to if indeed I am facing this problem? I really don't want to go talk to people, but I need help.
It would be nice if every community had a wonderful community mental health agency that was really accessible, but it doesn't exist evenly around the country. Often schools, public school counselors, will work with kids who are involved with divorce and can give community referrals to fathers. Some communities have social workers who work in the divorce area with kids, or psychologists even. But honestly, that's why it led me to write this book as a manual, because men are pretty independent. And by hopefully looking at some of the levels of dealing with divorce that I've talked about in this book, men will be able to follow through and be able to really help themselves.
What do you see as the biggest difference between a child's relationship with his mom and that with his dad when a divorce occurs?
If both parents work to keep their children out of the middle, there can be no difference in the relationship, but that really doesn't always happen. Usually bad things on the part of one parent or the other seep in. For example, in terms of keeping the child out of the middle, one family, in this case it was a mother, swore that she did, and her child, who was about 8, would report being very uncomfortable because he would go to see his father on the weekend and his mother would always give him a message. And the message would be, tell your dad that he needs to buy you new sneakers for school if he can spare the money from spending it on his bimbo. And
oh,
the child had
goodness.
To deliver the message.
Oh.
And of course, it poisoned the whole kind of situation, and often kids feel disloyal to one parent if they talk about the other.
And they get a new vocabulary. He probably asked, Dad, what's a bimbo?
What's a bimbo? And he didn't look at his dad's friend in the same light. It can often happen, and sometimes fathers have to fight this.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on divorcing dads.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Barry Freeman about fathers and divorce.
One dad, a coach of his son's soccer team, and he was really involved in soccer, and he went to all the games, and he had a very uncomfortable relationship with his ex-wife, who was divorcing him, and she had taken up with several younger men in the community, and he felt really disgraced by this. And he was informed by her that she was bringing one of her young new boyfriends to the next soccer game, and he was the assistant coach, and he was in a group of other men, and he said, I'm not going to go. I'm not going to be humiliated. I'm not going to let her do that. And one of the guys said, yeah, yeah. And one of the guys, who was a huge guy, football player, he got up and he said in colorful language, which I won't repeat, you get yourself at that game. If you can't deal with him, that's your business. But don't disappoint your son. Mm-hmm. He wants you to be there. If you have to sit on the other side of the field, sit on the other side of the field. If it bothers you to look at him, don't look at him. Look at your child. And he went. So people have to work really, really hard to keep their children out of the middle.
That was such a good example, though, of how one person in these kinds of circumstances can help another with great wisdom.
You know, it's a matter with the fathers, and again, I'm dealing with dads, of just, as one said, sucking it up and doing whatever they have to for their kid. One of the people I admired the most for the hardships he dealt with, he talked about his military experience. He said, I was in the military, and we were told to focus on the mission. The mission is the most important thing. And he said, my mission is the welfare of my kids, and I'm not going to let anything deter me. And he didn't.
we did a show quite a while ago, another show on another angle of divorce and separation, and we had a young woman sitting here who had been through a divorce situation, and she said she and her former husband, through the help that they were getting from the mediation center where they were going, decided that they wanted to handle this like a business. They wanted their child to be the best product they could create, and in order to do that, they had to work together from both sides with a common goal.
And that handling it like a business, we've tried to help people deal with in this divorce process, is see it as a business kind of separation where two people built a business together, much like you've both been partners for a number of years, and if you have to part, to look back on the good things that you did, wish each other well, divide the assets fairly, and both work for the betterment, in the family's case, of the children, and to keep this business-like relationship. Ex-spouses don't have to like each other, but you don't have to like the people that you work with in a business, but you treat each other with respect and you focus on the important thing, the welfare of your children.
Speaking of children, are there specific issues that arise with young children?
When parents announce that they're going to divorce, they're concerned with some very concrete things. Young children are pretty egocentric. They want to know what's going to happen to me. Where will I sleep? Where are my toys going to be kept? Will I not be able to play with my toys? Where will I go to school? And if dad moves out, will I ever see my father again? So they need to be reassured of the very basic kind of issues about where they're going to be. Yes, dad's going to move out, and here's dad's apartment, and dad would take him there, and this is going to be your part of the apartment, and we're going to put a poster up that you like, and we're going to put some of your toys here, and this is your space. So the child needs to really know the exact concrete things about what's happening to his life.
Does it make a difference in the child's overall mental health that he's staying in the house, usually with the mother, and the father is no longer in the house, he's in some other place? Does this make a difference in his relationship?
You know, whether they stay in the same house, whether they buy a new house each, both move, is not as important as the child's place in the house. If a parent moves, no matter where it is, and the child feels that this is home and they're decorating the space, even fathers with a one-bedroom apartment with very minimal space will take part of their living area and say to the child, this is your spot, and they'll put the child's posters up, little shelf for the child's toys. So it's his, and he has a place of his own. He's not a visitor. It's his place. That's the most important thing.
And he can feel that it's his home, even though he has a home with his own bedroom there. In other words, can he still have that same sense of ownership in two places, especially when one is new?
These are kids. What do kids know? Kids know from what is. If a kid is in life with just a single parent, they think that's the way it is. If they live in an apartment, they don't know that their other kids live in 10-bedroom houses with swimming pools. Whatever is. And if it's comfortable and if it's their house and the food that they like is there and they can get a snack when they want and they have a place to play and their toys are there and it's happy, that's the important thing.
What about when you're dealing with teenagers? Are there differences?
Yeah, there are many more differences in teenagers because they're a lot more aware of relationships, and teenagers can get very, very angry. I dealt with one young boy. His father had an affair. I don't want to give the impression that I'm writing about fathers, that all fathers are virtuous and not the heavy in a lot of these situations. The father had an affair, and the mother ended up getting a sexually transmitted disease, which was serious and required her to be hospitalized. And this young man was furious at his father. I mean, absolutely furious. And he would not forgive him. He would not forgive him. He challenged the father, how could you do this? And he and his mother ended up moving away, and he really severed his relationship with his father. So teenagers can be a lot less forgiving. Also, teenagers are concerned with their own lives, their issues. Well, I still got my driver's license now that you're split. What about your promise to get me a car? Well, I still have that. Or will I still be able to keep my record collection? And teenagers, of course, are concerned with peer group. So it is very helpful if parents do split up in two different places, if they stay in the same neighborhood, so kids can go to the same school, have their same friends, and guarantee them, look, if it's a weekend when you're supposedly with me and you have a party with your friends, you go to a party with your friends. You live your own life. You don't have to be my caretaker.
What ages do you see kids feeling like, oh, well, maybe if I do this, I can get them back together, or maybe if I hadn't done this, they wouldn't have split up? You know, that kind of thinking.
That's a good question, because one of the things you work on when you deal with kids is to make sure they know it's not their fault. And one of the things that is very helpful is to talk to parents when they're thinking about divorcing, is to say, you have to tell kids this is an adult decision. And part of keeping kids out of the middle means that you tell kids, this is not your decision. We're making it for adult reasons. You're in no way responsible for this. This is our decision. To really let kids know that they are not responsible for anything. Because you're right, kids have that magical thinking. And I remember one young boy that I dealt with, he had the guilt of his whole parents' divorce. And in talking to him, I asked him why, and I found out that he said they used to fight. And he said, I went in and I asked my mother for new sneakers, and I really didn't need them. And when my father came home, they started screaming about money and this. And if I wouldn't have asked for those new sneakers, they wouldn't have had the fight and they wouldn't have divorced. And to really diffuse that and hopefully get the parents to tell them, no, you're not responsible. Yeah. You didn't do anything wrong.
Is there an age range when this magical thinking is most likely, or is it across the board, little kids through teenagers?
One of the things that really shocked me the most is I did a group of college-age students, and they had the hardest time adjusting to the divorce of their parents. Harder than the teenagers, harder than the elementary school kids, and harder than the young children.
Why was that, do you
think? I don't know. One of them said, my whole life is a fraud. They were together, and I left for college and had parents, and now I don't have anything anymore. I don't have a home to go back to. Oh,
they thought they were living in the Truman Show.
Exactly. It was just really difficult. So the guilt can go across ages, and parents have to work hard. Again, the mantra is keeping children out of the middle, letting them know they're not responsible.
Do you think adopted kids have a harder time? I know of one adopted child who said, well, now I've been rejected twice.
It can be. My experience with adopted kids runs from kids who feel that they've been rejected by a parent to kids. I just had a young lady in one of my classes who just discovered her birth parent with the help of her adopted parent, and she's in her 20s. And she said that the woman was so irresponsible, and she was still on drugs, and she was still living an irresponsible life. And she said, I have an affection for her, but when I came home, I really thanked my real parents for taking care of me and giving me a decent life. So it can go both ways.
What about custody choices? There seem to be a whole lot of different kinds of arrangements.
The key is, if parents have a business-like relationship and can work together, then a lot of the courts favor joint custody. And that joint custody means that both parents have a say in the major decisions, where the child will go to school, if there's some medical treatment that's needed, how the child should be raised religiously. But even with joint custody, there's the issue of just custodial custody, who takes care of the child. And really, that decision should be made in terms of what's in the best interest of the child. Not in terms of what's in the best interest of the parents. You know, not, well, I have them exactly 50% of the time and you do too, but what's in the best interest of the child. So parents can work together to make the joint decisions in a child's life, but still one might be the one spending more time with the child than the other.
What about this business of joint custody? You know, the kid spends 50% of his time at mom's house and 50% of his time at dad's house. But he's supposed to go to school in between and keep track of his homework. You know, we all have enough trouble keeping track of things when we're in one place. How does that work,
well,
really?
Well, joint custody doesn't necessarily mean that the kid will spend 50% of the time with each parent. It means they both have the decision-making process. But you're asking an important question, and I deal with that a lot in training teachers, that if a teacher knows that you have a child whose parents are living in separate houses, you make concessions. It's the dad who sees the child every other weekend. You send the dad notices in the mail. When the child has a project to do over the weekend, the dad should know what the project is. The mom should say, here's the project, Johnny did this much, and the father take over and do the rest, just as if they were living together in a harmonious situation. And that's what I mean by the business relationship.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on divorcing dads.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Barry Freeman about fathers and divorce.
One of the hardest things is to get fathers to realize that if you just have a child on a weekend, you don't have to play all the time, that you do homework, that it's okay to say to the child, okay, we made dinner together, now help me clean the dishes, you know, let's mow the lawn together, that you do just the normal things, that you don't have to be, the expression has been a Disneyland dad, you don't have to enamor the child all the time, that you just live a normal life with the child.
Which means pretty organized if you are going to have places for homework at both places and places for boots and scarves and projects and so
forth. You're right. And it requires communication between both parents and some willing to work together for the betterment of the child.
Society's pendulum seems to swing back and forth concerning whether it's better for parents to stay together for the sake of the children or not. What do you think?
Staying together for the sake of the children, is it for the sake of the children or is it for the sake of the parents' feelings about how other people perceive them? We want children in normal development. If we want children to grow up to see role models of what a relationship's like, do we want them to see a relationship that's devoid of affection? Do we want them to see a relationship where people yell and scream at each other? Do we want them to see a relationship where one person is heavy-handed and the other person is depressed all the time? I don't think it does children any good to see parents in a bad, horrible relationship. It doesn't help them. I wouldn't advocate parents who have a difference with each other to just get a divorce. It's like people who own a business together. If they have a problem, you work on it. You commit to some kind of plan to work as hard as you can to solve the problem. But if you can't, if the differences cannot be solved, divorce is an option.
Wouldn't you say that when parents are working in that situation where they're getting some counseling, working on their relationship, that it's important that the children know about that as well? That's a really important example, I would think.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. That life is difficult. I mean, you have to explain to children a million things, and you have to discipline children, you have to put limits on children. And sometimes, just speaking from my own experience, I've screwed up and I've said the wrong thing to my kids. And I can recall a million times, you know, knocking on the door of my 7-year-old or when they were 8 or whatever and saying, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I should have listened to you. I didn't listen clearly. I wasn't hearing, whatever. It's okay to apologize to kids.
Well, that's modeling the kind of behavior
exactly.
You hope they'll have.
Yeah. And just some constructive problem solving. But, you know, sometimes after parents do go through therapy and both put their energy into it, the result is that they're not compatible with each other. And hopefully they can divorce in a way that really doesn't hurt their children and they don't injure each other.
Sounds to me like when there are troubles, the best thing to do if you can't talk it out is to get as much help as you can, not to wait till things really deteriorate.
That's great advice for anything. There is still a stigma about talking about being unhappy. You know, a man probably loses a lot of status points amongst his friends by going in and saying, you know, my wife is having an affair. I mean, the implication is that he's not good enough to meet her needs or whatever. So men are still embarrassed, and it's humiliating to deal with a lot of those issues.
We have a lot of reforming of society to do, don't we?
It would be nice if we could get people to be nice to each other.
Well, unfortunately, we are coming to the end of our time now. But before we leave, we would like to know what resources you would suggest for our listeners who want to pursue this topic further.
It's self-serving, but obviously I think the book that I wrote is a good resource. Titled The Divorcing Father's Manual, 8 Steps to Help You and Your Children Survive. And the steps I really derive from my own experience in clinically in working with fathers. And I look at learning to survive. I call it the initial assault of first dealing with your feelings when your love relationship ends. And then how to, secondly, to disengage from the old love. How to part and realize that your relationship is over. And then working for a non-adversarial divorce. I really hope that fathers and moms will keep out of the courts and they decide what's best for their kids and not let judges who really don't know their kids decide. And then, on a more positive, upbeat note, to help fathers assess their role as father and to make a plan in terms of how they're going to father their child. The next step would be to really understand what the child's experiencing, a lot of things that we said, how they perceive divorce. Because if you know what the child is thinking, you can channel your discussions in a way that the child can understand. And then learning how to be a single father and doing it all. And I have some recipes for meals in this book.
You use them yourself?
That's where they came from.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Of course.
Okay.
All kitchen tested. Because a lot of the dads would take their kids out for fast food and not cook. And as an early childhood educator, cooking is such a wonderful way to teach kids so many things about math and science and being together. So it's trying to empower kids. And little things like how to fix a ponytail, how to hem a dress, all these important things that you need to know to be a single father and to do it all alone. And once you have that, you have the confidence in yourself. And still, after that, learning how to deal with your ex-wife in a business-like manner, as we've discussed, so you can always deal with this person. And finally, starting a dating life. How do you explain to your children when you're dating? Who do you introduce to your children? And most divorced people do remarry, and dealing with the whole step-parenting kind of situation and integrating families in a way that's healthy and works for both kids.
Barry, are there organizations or websites that you might suggest to our listeners?
I list some of the websites in the back of my book, the American Academy of Pediatrics, several professional organizations in early childhood, ACEI, it's called the Association for Childhood Education International, the National Association for the Education of Young Children. A lot of government mental health sites have really good information.
And I know in that same section of your book, there are lists of other things to read.
Yeah, other references too.
Well, you have been a wonderful reference for us and for all of our listeners. So, Dr. Barry Freeman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Barry Freeman's book, The Divorcing Father's Manual, 8 Steps to Help You and Your Children Survive and Thrive. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. Sometimes the answering machine doesn't give us a full picture. Please mention show number 253. And tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Sanjay Dilawari. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.